This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, back at the D Bar Canada, downtown Las Vegas. A special shout, the tireless work of Ken, Dez, Miles, Isaiah, the rest of the crew worked late into the night to make sure that we got back to home, and that is the D with the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw. I'm Patrick Maher. We welcome you in a huge, and I'm talking huge, week four college football. It's a fantastic card, boys. Six games featuring ranked teams squaring off against one another starting tomorrow. That's the most in a single day since 2006, so a loaded college football slate. Of course, week three of the NFL kicked off last night with kind of a ho-hum yawner for the 49ers, 30-12, with that number closing 10.5 over the Giants. We'll get into that and more. Ben Hartsock's going to join. Mike Somich is going to join. Mr. Jordan Love, looking forward to Mr. Nevada himself stopping by. We start with the boys back at Bar Canada. We'll say hi to Amal Shaw. What's cracking, Amal? How are you?
Not much. Fired up, man. This is going to be an unbelievable weekend. I love your lead in one of the best weekends in college football. Really going back almost 8 years. We've got six top 25 matchups, and you've got some marquee names on the slate. It's going to be a ton of fun. And then, of course, the NFL as well. Can't wait for it.
Should we talk about the navy blue? You've switched it up today. You look very handsome.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not used to seeing the navy blue. Is something going on in your life? Have you met a new girl? What's happening there?
No. Generally, navy is reserved for court. You know, just wanted to make sure when I presided in front of the judge, they didn't give me a longer sentence than I was expected. So this way, got probation, looking pretty good. Weekend furloughs, she'll be allowed to be coming to the D and circuit to watch the NFL in college. So it'd be good.
All right. Good observation, though.
Good observation skills, Maher.
And Mr. Grunge himself, Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy. What's cracking? How are we feeling? Low energy before the show started. I'm hoping you ramp it up a little bit as we get going. Would you like to defend yourself?
Hey,
no, just kidding. This is a big weekend. It's as good as it gets. This is why you eat all those wings. It's why you drink all those beers. It's why you start betting in week zero, week one, week two, to be ready for this week of college football where the games are so elite. You kind of have a good idea of where you're at, what you're seeing well, how these teams look, and you have the muscle memory to compete when it comes to betting because you've betted through eating two dozen wings, three dozen wings, two or three pitchers of beer, and now when it matters the most, you will rise to the top.
Go ahead.
He started to struggle halfway through that monologue, but the fact that he pulled through was as impressive as anything we've seen all week. Good job, big guy.
Quick question for you. On a day like tomorrow, right, we got Florida State, Clemson kicking off at Noosers.
Well,
I already know that. Come on, don't tell me things I already know. This is a more important question for someone like me because I'm not going to get delivery of food. I just refuse to get extorted for money unless it's at gunpoint. The bottom line is, would you get delivery early? Do you go pick up at like 9 o'clock? See, on the East Coast, you can get delivery at 11:30. You're ready to roll. What are you doing?
Oh, that's a tough call. So, one, I look through the deals section of the apps, the ones that are offering buy one, get one potentially. Here's the issue. Normally, I would be getting a delivery service. However, keto has begun today. We got to get ourselves into ketosis. We got to start burning some fat because I went to try on some clothes the other day, and I think I have to give away half my wardrobe.
Congratulations. Ketosis is on the way. Maybe over the next 3 hours, we shall see. Boys, let's get it started. I mentioned a full slate as far as college football. This morning I woke up, I said, hey, send me your plays. Dustin and Amal both sent over like 12 to 14 plays.
I left some off,
so
by the way.
There's going to be plenty of picks along the way. Let's get to it. Last night, week three opens up the NFL. I mentioned 30-12. The Giants' magic ran out in the desert. The Giants looked like, Amal Shaw, a team dealing with injuries, awkward travel, sleeping in strange beds as they stayed in Arizona, went up to Santa Clara. But really the theme going into the matchup, close 10.5, really the theme, and we discussed it all show yesterday, was playmakers. The Giants don't have them, and of course, the 49ers have a plethora, whether it's Debo, 6 catches, 129, the touchdown, McCaffrey, 119 total yards, Kittle, 7 for 90, Purdy, 310, 2 touchdowns, Elijah Mitchell, the rookie, Ronnie Bell. Like, that was the difference. It really was glaring when you watched the game. You know, Jones was whatever. He wasn't any good. We had a constant conversation on the show with the Daniel Jones survivor draft, but he didn't really have any help. That was a big-time mismatch for the 49ers, and they took care of business.
No question about it. By the way, great call by you on Elijah Mitchell. I think he had 27 yards in the first half. Easily gets over that total. So the prop you gave out at 28.5, an easy winner on that one. Winds up with 42 total. But it's nice when you're going in the second half and you need 1 yard. You're like, dude, just don't break an ankle stepping onto the field. You'll be okay to be able to cash this one.
Well, Dustin actually, because Dustin was on it too. Dustin said, are we going to lose this Elijah Mitchell prop by a yard and a half? And I looked up. We had 2 quarters to go. I said, we're good, big guy. Go ahead, Amal.
Yeah, you know what? The one thing that stood out to me last night, Giants wind up with only 150 total yards. The 49ers with 441. Think about it, guys. 9 yards short of almost tripling the output of the New York offense. This team, when you look at the final score, 30-12, the game was a little bit closer than the 18-point victory. What I couldn't figure out is how they stayed in the game. It looked like the officials were trying to ensure that the 49ers got that cover. How about 2 third-down penalties? And on the third time, finally, they get a stop again by the Giants, and they end up kicking a field goal. But the San Francisco team, they didn't execute particularly well in the red zone like they normally do. But again, 6 scoring drives last night, tremendous job. They really did a good job against this Giants team from a defensive standpoint. Patrick, you pointed out one thing in week one that kind of stuck with me last night. You said, hey, they just stuck Daniel Jones out there and made him stay in that game that was 33, might have been 40-0 at that point in time against the Cowboys. Last night, they decided to put Tyrod Taylor in. I know it's an 18-point game, but I bring it up because I said yesterday, this could be a scenario where the Niners are way out in front, and similar scoreline, say, hey, you know, 30-10, whatever, 27-10, and you might have an opportunity for a backdoor cover. Instead, we see Tyrod Taylor make an appearance, and I go, well, there goes the Giants team total.
And the Giants team total was 16.5, yeah. 27.5 on the 49ers. And Amal mentioned it, and I think it's a good point, big guy. Your Giants, I mean, if you take a look, they had, what, 10 first downs, 150 total yards, as Amal just mentioned. But oddly enough, they were kind of hanging around in this game. If you're the 49ers, this is a weird game, the kind of way it transpired. It's 17-6 at the half. 5-point game once Breida scores with less than 4 minutes to go in the third. It's odd how the Giants played about as horribly, and they couldn't tackle on defense. They played about as horribly as you could, but they were kind of still hanging around, weren't doing anything. A kind of a weird game as far as the ebb and flow.
I mean, the Giants are a weird team because I like the coaching, and I think a lot of what you saw in the first half was like a decent game plan overall, but the roster's not good. Like, this has been an 11-12-year offensive line rebuild. Daniel Jones can't throw from his back. Like, I don't understand what they're supposed to do offensively. Like, nothing matters from the infrastructure of building a team if you can't give the quarterback time to make plays. And I know the Niners front's great. I know it's an elite defense, but it's every week. It doesn't matter who they face. The Giants' offensive line is a sieve. People are constantly coming through. The last thing you want to see is Gary Brightwell is one of your leading receivers for the day. He shouldn't even be on the field. I get he's there because Saquon's out, but you're having to dump the ball off to a running back over and over again. Breed is getting touches. Like, it's just, it's such a bad offense right now, and I think they did add pieces you could win with, but none of it matters if you can't keep the quarterback back there upright to throw the ball.
We had some fun with it, Amal. Well done, big guy. We had some fun with it, Amal. I look, Hargrave, Bosa, Kinlaw, Armstead, they all had at least 3 pressures. So we had fun with the Jones conversation, and while I'm going to concede eventually, probably by the end of the year, I might be on the wrong side of the Jones conversation. I don't think last night is a way to measure it. Like, impossible spot for the quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I don't think yesterday was a measuring stick. You're going up against an elite, elite football team. You could see it. Look at the way Debo Samuel and George Kittle run afterwards. I love the fact that they showed that old Mark Bavaro clip from that Super Bowl 24.5 game when the Giants played the 49ers on Monday night. Al Michaels making both calls. But more importantly, guys, the one thing that I take away, and this is where I disagree with Dustin. Yes, the Giants have some concerns along the offensive line. This defense is far better than they get credit for. They kept them in that football game last night. I mentioned the stops they had. Look, it was make it, take it. I just told you they had 141 total yards last night. I'm sorry, 150 yards last night. They were, They had, what, 41 yards on the ground, I think it was? They were not a good and efficient football team. The offense puts too much pressure on the Giants defense. I'm not saying that they're an elite defense like Dallas or San Francisco, but this defense with a competent offense, say someone like Miami, that's maybe an elite offense, but somebody who's pretty good, not great, this team would be far better than this. And remember, they made the playoffs last year. Let's not completely discount them. And Patrick brought up a great point. Going in the fourth quarter, it was 20-12. It was a one-score game. It didn't necessarily feel like it at all times, but the Giants were there.
So I wrote down to your point. So the Giants defense kind of held, and then the levee broke.
Yep.
After that Breida score, I wrote down, you guys correct me, three straight scoring drives kind of heading into the fourth quarter for the 49ers. But again, that was 2.5 quarters of a Giants defense that was gas, big guy, that kind of hung around and was the reason the Giants were still in that matchup, because offensively they couldn't get anything done.
Yeah, I mean, they're fine. Like, they're okay. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're good. Like, they're middle of the road. Wink Martindale likes to blitz, breaking news. Like, he loves to blitz people. And unfortunately, in this case, I don't think the Giants tackled very well. They didn't look very good, like very disciplined tackling guys in the open field, and that's a major issue. I think they're okay. I think the offense is meh. I think it's not a good team. And I think what we saw last year was being beneficiaries of a really easy last place schedule. They are basically the Vikings with less talent.
Yeah, but also we're comparing against them against what? I would say power ranked the 1 and 2 teams in the National Football League, San Francisco and Dallas. I mean, we're going to sit there and compare against two teams that are one of the four favorites to win the Super Bowl and that are elite football teams. I disagree with what Dustin's saying here. I think the Giants deserve more credit. And you used a great analogy, Patrick. The levee eventually broke, and that's exactly what happened last night.
What's next for both the 49ers and Giants? We'll come back, boys, and discuss. Again, kind of a ho-hum, 30-12, sleepy Week 3 opener winner for the 49ers. We're also going to run the NFL board here on Sharp Money and get to some college football. We're just getting started on a Friday.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, do me a favor, boys. Get Ken and have Ken, by the time I'm done with this read, standing behind you. We're going to have him take a bow. Okay, the legend that is Ken. VSiN shows are clashing. All right, help us out. We want a $1,000 voucher at Circa for Super Bowl futures here on Sharp Money. All you have to do, now here's the deal. You're going to get the annual subscription and you're going to save 10%. Promo code SHARP. Okay, VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. Save 10% right now. We are competing with every other VSiN show, so help us. Help the little show that could. And that is Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetles, and myself, Patrick Maher, by using the code SHARP. The legend that is Ken. And shout to my girl Dez as well. They got a little surprise on the way. If we go to the shot there at the D, downtown Las Vegas, with Amal Shaw and Dustin Sweetelson. There is, and it is odd to see. Boys, can we talk about a beardless Ken? Because while my man can put together anything with a piece of gum and a paperclip, every time I see him without a beard, it freaking trips my brain out.
Ken, thoughts? Can you confirm or deny you actually shave with a knife? Yeah. I knew it. He takes a really sharp, regular knife, and he's just like,
hey, Ken. Hey, tell Ken that yesterday I had a clogged sink, and I had to call a plumber in, and he asked what type of tools I had, and I said I had exactly zero. Ken will never speak to me again the rest of my life because I am not a man, and he is all man. That's it.
By the
way, thank you.
Which one is the Phillips head screwdriver, the flat one or the not flat one?
Well, think about this, Gene. You just answered the question. A flathead is flat. Phillips is not flat. It's a poor round.
Well, I didn't know if Phillips was an alternative term for flat.
All I know is Ken goes by, for people that may run into him, his real name is Richard Dean Anderson. His TV name is MacGyver. I mean, this guy can put anything together. It's unbelievable. By the way, he just shaved a 2-year beard.
What? One day we're going to be like, hey, guys, I haven't seen Ken in a couple days. Where is he? And all of a sudden we're going to get like a connection notice. Hey, it says the moon is trying to connect. Is Ken on the moon?
He is. Dude, he is unbelievable.
The dude is walking testosterone. Anyway. Thank you. Thank you to the whole crew. Honestly, they put a ton of work in to get us back at the D. So thank you very much. Okay, let's get to this. And we've got so much. This is legitimately, like, the fact that we get paid for this Friday show on September 22nd with a full slate and a full board, the NFL. You've got ranked matchups across college football. We've got games tonight, which we'll get to and coming up in just a little bit. But quickly, next up for the Niners, how about this? They started 3-0 in 2019. Remember, that was the Super Bowl loss. They host the Cards next week. You guys see the number with the Niners and the Cards coming to town? I think it's
16,
around 17? 14 and a half,
oh, okay.
Maybe touching 15. And they won both against Arizona last year, a combined 76-23. My assumption, Amal Shaw, is that we're going to see this 49er team move to 4-0, and that will be a popular survivor pick for those that have the Niners remaining. Speaking of survivor, I think 20-22% of contestants, not necessarily survivor, but just across the board, used the Niners last night, so they advance.
I had a pretty good call. The game, even though it was tight, you felt like San Francisco was in control of that football game. What a spot for them next week. You mentioned against Arizona. They're coming off three additional days of rest. Christian McCaffrey will be fully engaged and healthy. I know they limited his carries to 18 last night for 85 yards, but overall, love the way this team is playing. Debo got banged up just for a quick minute. Beautiful throw by Purdy to Debo, and then can we just take a second to recognize how hard those three guys in offense run? CMC, even you see it from Juwan Jennings a little bit, Debo, and then, of course, George Kittle. I mean, Kittle reminds me a little bit of Gronkowski. It's like you're not actually bringing him down. You just try and shove him to the sideline as that 12th defender to be able to get the stop.
It's incredible. The 49ers were 8 of 10 on third downs in the first half, 9 of 16 overall, no turnovers. The run pass balance was ridiculous. 26 first downs as compared to your Giants, 10 first downs. And Amal just mentioned McCaffrey. He tied, you ever heard of him? Jerry Rice for a franchise record, 12 straight games for the Niners with a touchdown. He's different. The dude is different. And remember, big guy, our listeners used to call and clown me because I would clown McCaffrey. Let's just say I'm on the wrong side of that argument as well. McCaffrey's the real deal. Well, he is him.
He also found the perfect spot for him, and he's proven why he's one of the handful of running backs worth paying, because he impacts the game as a receiver and as a running back. Like, they're the only team that I can think of that has a running back who could be a receiver if he wanted to, and a receiver who could probably play running back if he wanted to. And I guess my biggest takeaway from last night, guys, is outside of week five hosting Dallas, when does Brock Purdy lose his first game? He's undefeated as a quarterback. When does he lose his first game? Because they've got Arizona, as you mentioned, big point spread. They'll move on. They host the Cowboys, which will be big. They go to Cleveland and to Minnesota back-to-back. Week 9 before their bye, they've got Cincinnati, where we don't know how Joe Burrow's going to feel, look, or play. Off the bye at Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, at Seattle. Like, are we talking Brock Purdy's going to be undefeated till he faces Philadelphia, who he has a revenge factor against because he got hurt against them in the NFC title game a year ago and they lost that game? Like, he's undefeated in the regular season.
I'd say measuring Purdy, Amal, is weird as well, because you said it yesterday, and what are we, 9 starts into his career? You might be onto something with him, but it's hard to measure him because of the Shanahan factor. Dustin mentioned it. One of the reasons I used to kill McCaffrey is because he was always injured. I mean, perpetually injured. But that system and the way that Shanahan uses him, it's a very Baroque offense in the sense that there's just so many different. There's movement all over the place. You never feel settled. It really is. It's a joy to watch. And McCaffrey and Purdy right now shining.
No question about it. You know, I thought when they acquired Christian McCaffrey, it was the most under-the-radar trade I can remember. I mean, nobody talked about it that much. And I was like, wow, they got CMC. And he was a very good player in Carolina, but nobody on the perimeter to really help him out. Now you come to San Francisco, you already had arguably the best run after catch or run after contact player in Debo Samuel. You add in Christian McCaffrey. Purdy's done a nice job. You know, Bill Parcells has always been a proponent of quarterbacks that play junior and senior year, guys that had more than two seasons of starts. That's what Brock Purdy brought to the table for the 49ers, that level of experience that was lacking maybe for some guys that come out like an Anthony Richardson or some of these guys that didn't have a ton of games under their belt. But he's done a tremendous job so far. Guys, when you look at the schedule, that game on Sunday, October 8th, I mean, this might be the best game we see in the regular season until the playoffs involving any two teams. Cowboys 49ers on Sunday night in Santa Clara. It feels like it's going to determine, not to slight the Philadelphia Eagles because they're there as well, but it feels like it's going to determine who's going to have home field advantage in January. And boy, is that going to be crucial.
I've got big guy Seattle showing one at DraftKings next Monday night, the 2nd of October, at your Giants. Feels disrespectful. Are you good with it?
Yeah, look, the offensive line, I'll always come back to it. Dude, they've been rebuilding this offensive line like for three presidents. Like, we've had three different families move in and out of the White House since the offensive line for the Giants has been not even good, just like salvageable, like solid, like decent, protecting the guy back there. It's really bad, man. And I don't know when Barkley's coming back. I don't think it matters that they added some pieces. You saw last night them trying to force the ball to Waller. They barely had enough time with safeties creeping up to get the ball in the hands of Waller because they know that this team can't push the ball downfield right now. I don't like what I'm seeing from this offense. Barkley was not worth paying. I still agree with that. But not having him allows people to key in on Daniel Jones. And as long as you bring pressure, they're going to get right through that line.
All right, listen, I get you're a Giants fan, but now I'm getting a little bit irritated. You are misreading this team completely. I love the Giants at minus one against the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. That's an additional day plus the three they've had here. I know they've been on the West Coast for a while. This is like all of a sudden us measuring Texas against one of the worst Alabama teams we've seen in a while and saying, Texas is 2005 Texas with Vince Young. No, they're not, and here's the reality of it. The Giants have played the Cowboys and the 49ers in two of their three games. Let's give them a break for a minute. How many other teams in the National Football League out of the other 30 wouldn't probably be 0-2 against these two teams right now?
How good are the Cowboys, really? They beat the Jets with Zach Wilson.
Let me tell you something. They moved the ball up and down against that team, against that defense. Josh Allen looked like he belonged back in the Mountain West Conference based on his performance against the Jets on Monday Night Football. Josh Allen single-handedly kept the Jets in the division that night.
I'm not ready to write the Super Bowl tickets for the Cowboys just yet.
There's three teams. There's three teams.
The boys are fighting 24 minutes into the program. This is going to be interesting. Go ahead.
If the Giants don't have Saquon Barkley, they will not beat the Seahawks. It's simple as that.
We're going to find out on Monday night.
You know what's interesting? Well, I was watching Brock Purdy last night, and we've seen the downfall of Matt Campbell and Ames.
Yeah.
What the hell is that guy doing? Like, we dodged a bullet. We got that goofball in Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. They wanted to sign Matt Campbell as the next head coach of the Lions. First of all, he can't win a game at Iowa State. And Purdy's senior year, he went completely downhill. Look what Shanahan's doing with him. Campbell, not good right now. Stock.
He had some good players. Xavier Hutchinson on the perimeter when he had Brock Purdy there. They
Alan
failed.
Lazard.
Yeah, they had some good players.
Charlie Kolar.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned Iowa State. I know Sweetelson's on the other side. I love the Cyclones at home against you. I'm a man. I'm 40 this weekend in Ames.
Oh, speaking of which, 2007, September 22nd, Gundy's I'm a man, I'm 40 rant today, 2007. How about that? We were just talking about that the other day. I cannot wait for Amal Shaw's Ohio State Buckeyes at Notre Dame. We're getting into that next here, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform. Parlays, props, game lines, it's all there. Research every NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and soccer bet with historic stats and data. Stop betting in the dark. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com. And use the code WINNER, and you're going to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. We're going to win some money today as we welcome you back. Of course, Amal mentioned it during the break. So much college football with the six top 25 matchups over the weekend. Cannot wait for Saturday. It almost felt like last week, the calm before the storm, because the matchups weren't quite there, but it was ominous because tomorrow it's about to get crazy. Dustin Sweetelson, of course, Amal Shaw at the D. And I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. So let's do this. Let's get into it. You know, it's interesting when you talk about Ohio State and Notre Dame, both 3-0, obviously ranked coming into this matchup. The number quickly right now sitting 3.5. DraftKings is showing 3.5. Remember, this is kind of toggled between Ohio State laying 3, 3.5. 3 is still the key number, not just the NFL, but also college football. 55.5 on the total. I think it's fascinating. We start Notre Dame and Sam Hartman, his sixth year. Remember, this is a guy that played in big games in a small program at Wake, 11 wins, ACC championship berth in 2021 with Wake Forest, but nothing like he's about to see against Ohio State there at Notre Dame coming up Saturday, NBC. But this has been a very good start. You could argue, amongst the two, Amal Shaw, the best win, obviously, Notre Dame going to NC State. And Hartman's been ridiculous. 13 touchdown passes, no picks, completing over 71% of his passes. A lot of talent on that offensive front. Let's go ahead and jump into Notre Dame's side of this matchup.
Let's start on the offense for the Irish here. Sam Hartman, to me, is the third best quarterback in college football behind Caleb Williams and Jordan Travis down at Florida State. I think this guy's unbelievable. Legitimate dual threat. He's not someone who's going to take off and run for yardage, but he's going to make the cerebral rushing play when necessary. I love what he can do for this team in terms of his accuracy, and then, of course, making the play when necessary. When you look at this team on the perimeter, it's Thomas and Tyree, Merriweather. These guys can go and pluck the football. Their tight end play is unbelievable here. When you look at Mitchell, what he can do with Mitchell Evans, he is outstanding. They will utilize him, particularly in the red zone. They'll use their tight ends on some crossing routes as well. They're dangerous. And then when you look at Estime, the running back, I think he's far better than many people realize. He can pound you in between the tackles. This is a very good offensive line. Joe Alt is a name you'll want to get to know. Could end up as a first-team All-American on that left side there. He is a guy that's going to probably wind up in the first 45 picks of the NFL draft, Patrick. I like what this Notre Dame team brings to the table and can present some problems. On the flip side, an Ohio State transfer, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. He's been one of the better edge rushers for Notre Dame so far this season. This team is pretty good defensively, but they're really going to get tested in this game because you're going to face off against an elite offense. I still think when I look at Notre Dame, they're a very, very good football team, regardless of what I believe the result to be on Saturday. I think the number is too short here, Patrick. I thought this line should have been 7. I thought the number came in way shorter than it should have been, simply because Notre Dame is a brand. They've taken care of business. First team to exceed over 30 points against NC State and Dave Dorn in 20-plus games. They're getting a ton of credit for that win, and rightfully so, as you alluded to, the best win so far we've seen out of either of these programs. On the flip side, I don't think people realize Ohio State is second in college football in scoring defense, only behind Michigan. They give up 10 points to Western Kentucky. You can say whatever you want about the Hilltoppers, but we know they're a team that can throw the ball and they're effective through the air. The Buckeyes projected to have 5 guys starting in their 22 that could be first-round picks and probably 9 to 10 guys that go in the first 75 picks. They've got pros all over the field. I think that's going to be the difference. It's the old James Franklin line. We are a very good football team, and that's exactly what Notre Dame is, a very good football team. But Ohio State is elite. And Jim Knowles in his second year, when you look at statistically how well his teams have performed at Oklahoma State, at Cornell, they've gotten better defensively in his second year. They pick up exactly what he wants to do. Right now, Denzel Burke has the highest defensive rate for DBs in terms of grading from PFF. For players that have been thrown at 17 times or more, he's only given up a 30% completion rate. He's been outstanding. JT Tuimoloau and, of course, Sawyer have to get after the quarterback. If they can do that, I don't think Notre Dame defensively has got answers for Egbuka, Harrison, and then a guy who's finally healthy, Travion Henderson at the tailback position. If the Ohio State offensive line can hold up, the Buckeyes are going to win this game by 10 points or more. I think Ohio State is a complete football team, and this is finally the year for Ryan Day where he takes a step forward. Buckeyes go into South Bend, win a game. They haven't won in South Bend since 1996. Well, that was the last time they played there. And Kyle McCord and company come out with a victory.
And you mentioned Ryan Day. Good job, Amal Shaw. 16-1 at Ohio State in true road games. Big guy. I think there's a couple of reasons. Again, Notre Dame's been the most dominant team thus far, scoring 40 points in every game, winning each by at least 21. I think the difference this year, another year of Freeman, the trenches, I think they line up well against an Ohio State team who, I guess if you want to point to a question mark, you could say the defensive front. Also, last year, Notre Dame just had no answers at quarterback. This year, they very much do in Hartman. I think the game's going to hang in the balance in the fourth quarter. I'm with them all, so I'll shop for the three. I'll lay the three with Ohio State. Again, if you're laying 3.5, you're on the wrong side as far as the best of it. You can lay the three right now if you shop for the best number. Big guy, what do you got? Let's start with Notre Dame.
I'm with both of you. I'm going to lay it as well. I also have a play on the total. The total jumped out to me immediately. It just fell off. So Notre Dame hasn't beaten Ohio State in their last five meetings. 0-5, last five straight up against the Buckeyes. That's never good. Last year, week one, this game was a 21-10 game involving C.J. Stroud, who was a top three pick in the NFL draft, and they only scored 31 points in Columbus. So I think that plays into the under here. Ohio State's defense allowed just 21 points per game a year ago. Seven starters are back from that unit. They limited Austin Reed from Western Kentucky, who led the nation in passing a year ago, to just 207 yards a week ago. Buckeyes are 1-4 against the spread their last five road games, which is why I think this plays into a under situation where this is going to be a very close game. I do think they'll cover the three. But Notre Dame, they're going to be pressured. Right, this isn't Navy. This isn't some of the teams that the Fighting Irish have opened their season with here. I'm also with them all. I love Estime. I think Estime for Notre Dame is an absolute weapon. But when it comes to making plays outside of Hartman, I think he's the only reliable weapon they really have, whereas Ohio State is much deeper on the outside and can make big plays late when it matters. I do think the Notre Dame defense, though, is going to give McCord everything that he could possibly handle early on in this one. One thing to know is Sam Hartman has struggled under pressure. Last year, completed less than half of his passes in 167 dropbacks, made just five big throws while committing eight turnover-worthy plays and getting 37 sacks while under pressure. This Ohio State pass rush is really, really good. I guess I would say elite. They have a bunch of players on that line that can get to Hartman. I think that will limit his offense. I think McCord will be limited early on in the game. That's why I'm going to look at a first half underplay on this game. I think if the scoring comes, it comes later. And I also think it's Ohio State who will do the scoring later, and they will cover the three.
Patrick. Okay, Dustin. Amal, just quickly on that 21-10 in Columbus win for Ohio State last year over Notre Dame. Remember, Notre Dame went to the break up 10-7.
Yep.
So Just to follow up on what Dustin said, and that was with C.J. Stroud. Go ahead, Amal.
Yeah, to his point, the Buckeyes struggled. They get a late touchdown in that game from Xavier Johnson on a pass from C.J. Stroud. It was much tighter and much closer, if people recall, 14-10, really. And then, as you alluded to, the Buckeyes getting that late touchdown there. But to me, guys, you mentioned Estime. I don't think you can underestimate how good of a player he is.
Awesome.
No play on words there. I just think that if they didn't have Hartman, and if Notre Dame was given a little bit more respect, this guy's a Heisman candidate. He's an absolute beast. Don't allow his size to fool you. Think Jerome Bettis, but can be a real threat when he gets out in the open field. I really like him a lot. I think the one thing is, and I don't like the stat you gave on Hartman in terms of the pressure. I feel like that applies to almost every quarterback, right? Like whenever we want to justify a quarterback might struggle, we just go to the pressure stat, and I think most guys do in those situations.
So Brock Purdy last night, he's a guy that when he's blitzed and under pressure, thrives. He's very high numbers when he's facing pressure. That it's just something to point out, and I think that Ohio State is capable of getting up in his grill. And with the limited weapons on the outside, I don't know how they're going to make a lot of big plays against this Buckeyes defensive unit.
The skill is the difference. The skills, and here's the thing about Ohio State, Amal, I want to get your take. Did they wake up against Western Kentucky? Dustin astutely pointed out they held them to right around 200 yards passing. Why is that a big deal? Western Kentucky's got a top five passing offense
every
in the country.
Yeah.
Like the idea that you're going to hold them to 200 yards is pretty awesome, boys. And McCord woke up. It's against a bad Western Kentucky defense, but Indiana, a sleepy win for Ohio State in Bloomington, Youngstown, and kind of woke up against Western Kentucky, Amal.
I think a couple things happened. McCord realized he was going to be the only quarterback. He was saying that Devin Brown's not going to play help Kyle McCord. Got some opportunities, ball to Marvin Harrison and to Emeka Egbuka. These are first-round picks. I mean, these are guys that would come into the NFL right now and be ready. So I think that helps McCord a lot. Remember, McCord and Harrison were high school teammates in Philadelphia at St. Joe's. So I think a great opportunity. I just love the Buckeyes in this game. It's a good matchup for them, but don't discount the Irish. This is going to be a 10-2 type of season.
I'll lay the three. Amal, lay the three. Again, you can take the 3.5 if you like Notre Dame. And big guy, you're on the under as well, correct?
First half under.
Great spot for Clemson. We'll get to it. Florida State's in town next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Some college football peacocking going on right now between Amal Shaw and Dustin Sweetelson. You can feel the tension. It's palpable. Also, you can get $200 right now when you sign up as a new bettor over at DraftKings. All you have to do is bet $5 on an NFL game. Think about it this way. $5 instantly turns into $200. Why wouldn't you do it? Throw $5, get $200. Football's more fun when you're in on the action. So you sign up and you get this by using the code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Again, new customers, DraftKings, the crown is yours. Make sure you check it out. Download the DraftKings app. Hey, boys, quickly, I know we're going to get to Florida State Clemson. I was wondering if we were going to see a three. We're not. That number's going the opposite way. But for those of you interested, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher here on Sharp Money. For those of you interested in taking Baltimore and Survivor, remember, we're going to have that conversation with Samich later. We've got our top three picks, all of us. You guys see what happened with Baltimore? The Ravens have ruled out Odell Beckham Jr., Justice Hill, Marlon Humphrey, Ronnie Stanley, Tyler Linderbaum, Oway, Marcus Williams, the safety, legitimately 1, 2, 3, 4, like seven of their top 12 players ruled out hosting Indy with Gardner Minshew. Just a thought, boys. Just a thought. Well, anything on that?
We already used the Ravens, which makes me feel good because that probably means it's closer than it should be, although Anthony Richardson is out for the Colts. I would say, though, this could help with Lamar Jackson's MVP case, right? Missing all those players, and he just balls out once again against Indy.
I just think it would have been quicker if you told us which good players are playing for the Ravens. Holy cow, the whole team, it's insane.
Hey, Amal, because I know you love Florida State, can you and I have a quick conversation? Can we at least agree that Duke is legit?
I think Duke's got a chance to be the representative in the ACC conference title game. Remember, the top two teams go, regardless of the nonsensical names of the divisions that they have. So I completely agree with you. Riley Leonard, look, I thought one of the biggest coups that people overlooked in college football in the last 5 years was when Texas A&M hired Mike Elko to be the defensive coordinator from Notre Dame. I thought it was a great move. I love the job that Elko's done down there.
And I bring it up because Clemson, remember, opened their season at Duke, and their goal line execution was all-time bad. It was a new offense. Again, Charleston Southern, they dropped 66, Florida Atlantic 48. The competition, whatever. I'm just saying, I love this spot. I mentioned in my notes yesterday, big guy, I said, will we get a three on Clemson? Nope, going the other way. Yesterday was 2.5. Now we're down to 1.5 with Florida State laying it on the road. An interesting spot for Clemson because they're never in this spot at home over the last 7-plus years. I think Florida State's interesting. Again, should have probably lost at Boston College, and they're living off that second half to open the season against LSU. This is fascinating. Showed some weakness defensively, specifically against the pass, against a Boston College team. I love Clemson and Dabo in this spot. Let's go ahead and get it started. Dustin, we'll start with you.
Well, Clemson's won the last seven matchups going back to 2014. They've covered the last five. And here's the thing. I hate siding with Amal. I really do. I'd love to sit here and argue with him about something, but I'm not buying that there should be panic with the Seminoles based on what happened last week with Boston College. I think that was a situation where they knew they had Clemson coming up. They need to get in, get out unscathed. Sure, Boston College made it interesting. They came back in that one, but Florida State ultimately prevailed. And the reason why I really don't like Clemson is I get that Duke's legit. I'm not buying that this offense for the Tigers can step up to the plate and hang with the likes of the Seminoles. First off, we'll leave Jordan Travis to the side for a moment. Keon Coleman's averaging 14 yards a catch. Johnny Wilson's averaging 19 yards a catch. Tight end Jaheim Bell is averaging about 18 yards a catch. They've combined for 6 touchdowns in 3 games. They are weapons that are going to be very difficult for Clemson to deal with, and this defense doesn't have the household names we're used to seeing for Clemson. And when it comes down to it, it comes down to Jordan Travis ultimately. He is a veteran. He is a mature guy. I don't care about his numbers, even though they're off the charts, Heisman good to start the season. I think he has the maturity to lead this team into Death Valley and walk away with a win. I laid 1.5 with Florida State, and I feel great about it.
Amal, you see the clock. 5:50 to go. Don't apologize for going long. I want you to take your time and tell me why you're going to lay it with Florida State. Because I already freaking know you're going to lay it with Florida State because you love this team. I'll just say before you launch, I love Dabo and Clemson in this spot.
Well, I want to clarify something. I did not bet Florida State yet. And I probably want them to win the ACC. This is a crucial game. But I do agree with Patrick. It's a great, great spot for Clemson here at home. Look, the concern that I have when I look at this Tigers team, their running back combination, we talked about what Edwards and Corum are at Michigan. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you haven't watched Shipley and Maffa play, these guys are as good of a combo. Will Shipley has been criminally underutilized and underappreciated in his entire tenure so far in Clemson, South Carolina. He is that guy. He's an absolute dude. He might hurdle somebody tomorrow. There's an 80% probability he's going to hurdle somebody because that's what he does on Saturdays. But to me, it's going to come down to Cade Klubnik. Can he make the plays when necessary? You know, Dustin did a great job of laying out the perimeter for Florida State. They're outstanding. We didn't even talk about Trey Benson and what the running game could be. But can Klubnik make the plays with his legs when necessary? Because Jordan Travis will put his nose in there when it's third down and one. I promise you right now, that quarterback is not sliding on third and one. He's going over head first. Concussed, doesn't make a difference. Give me some smelling salts. I'm back out there. 10 years ago, these two teams met in Death Valley. Florida State came in as about a 3-point favorite. They had a young quarterback nobody knew at that time by the name of Jameis Winston. They went into Death Valley and hung over half a hundred. I'm not saying that's going to happen tomorrow. I don't think Florida State's quite as good as they were in 2013. But I think this Florida State team is ultra talented. The confidence that they have from that second half adjustment in Orlando will propel this team. Remember last year, they lost by 6 points in Death Valley. Their run defense was bad last year. That was the problem when you looked at Florida State. They've gotten better against the run. You know, people point to the BC game up at Chestnut Hill. It was 31-10. It was a pretty dominant performance. I'm not going to excuse the fact that they turned off the engine and put it in idle and allowed BC back in that game. But the reality of it is right now when you look at this Clemson team, the defense is very good, led by Jeremiah Trotter Jr. in the middle. But he is not. They're not quite as great as they've been in years past. They've got a team that can get after the quarterback. But I'm telling you, Jordan Travis's mobility. I said second best quarterback in college football. I stand by that statement. This guy is a difference maker. He's a playmaker. Patrick, I got no qualms with your bet. But I'm one area where I'm really concerned for Clemson. Can they win the turnover battle? If they don't win the turnover battle,
that's
we know that's the key in all of college football and NFL. But I think in this game, they have to be plus one at least. If we look up at the final score without knowing it and we say turnover 0-0, Florida State's walking out of there with a victory. If Clemson is plus two, the Tigers, their demise will be grossly over-exaggerated.
I think, boys, LSU killed themselves. I'm going to continue to build the case for Clemson. Would you both agree? Okay, and I'm glad you brought up turnovers because I do think, obviously, that could be the difference here. But the matchup of Florida State's offense against Clemson's defense, that's must see. What is crucial, boys, and I'd love to get your take on this, and that is Florida State's defense against Klubnik and that Clemson offense. That's, to me, what this comes down to.
Yeah, I think you're going to know really early on, Patrick, if your side is spot on here based on how Klubnik looks. If they get him some easy passes early to get his confidence going, that could be a positive sign for Clemson. But I don't know, Amal. When I look at Cade Klubnik, I see a lot of the things I saw in DJU when he was there. A lot of tentativeness, a lot of scared to make big plays. And can he make those throws when it matters late? I have concerns.
Hey, listen, this kid out of Austin West, like, you're not playing Lake Travis anymore, buddy. Adam Fuller's problem last year, he's the defensive coordinator of Florida State. They could not stop the run. They don't have to be great against the run, Patrick, but you cannot allow Will Shipley and Phil Moffitt to peel off 30 and 40-yard runs. If they have three runs of 20 yards or more, I think Florida State's going to be in trouble. If they can contain the big plays, Florida State's going to win this game. I'm with Dustin. I'm with you. I have some concerns about what Klubnik can do through the air. And one other thing, guys. If FSU jumps out early, it is going to be serious trouble for the Tigers. But if they've got a lead and they're playing from in front, it's going to be trouble time for those people from Tallahassee because I'm telling you, the ground game can control this one.
What about the coaching matchup, guys? What are concerns?
Dustin, can I just say this quickly? I wrote down Clemson's D and run game and a desperate Dabo. That's the spot I love. I think to Mal's point, I think Clemson, forget Klubnik. We need to run the football, rely on that defense, and Dabo, 11-4 ATS is a dog, 9 straight up wins. Go ahead.
Guys, we saw the blueprint in Tuscaloosa that Texas employed. Make them beat us through the air. If you could do it, you deserve to win the football game.
They shut down
Jace McClellan. You do the same thing. You let Shipley get a few plays. You know what you got to watch out for, though, is watch out for Shipley on the screen play. If you can negate that, you got a great shot.
Level of trust in Mike Norvell?
I'm not worried about Mike Norvell. He's got dudes.
Take us out, Dustin. What do you got? What are you going to do here with this game?
I'm laying it with Florida State, but I do have concerns that Dabo's been there, done that before, and Mike Norvell, it's only gotten going recently for him at Florida State.
Death Valley is going to be ridiculous. The Hill, watch out. Don't trip. When we come back, Ben Hartsock, we continue college football. Great hour, boys.